When it comes to fitness, what's real? How about when it really, truly fits your life? That's how Anytime Fitness sees it. Because our coaches see you. It's how they build personal plans that work wherever you are and focus on everything that matters, from fitness to nutrition to recovery, all so you can push yourself further than ever or just through the next rep. It's total 360 support for a real difference. That's Anytime Fitness. That's real AF. Visit anytimefitness.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 6 of
Mixtape
Memories.
I've been waiting for this moment.
Yes.
So this is an all Smiths and Morrissey and Johnny and Andy and everything Smithsy. it's kind of a tongue twister. episode.
Yes.
Yay.
I'm Jenners.
I'm Matt Hart Spade.
And we're excited to talk to you about, our love for the Smiths and all things Smiths related.
Yes. When did you first kind of fall in love?
You know, I got turned on to them like late, I think. You know, I might have mentioned this in a previous, in the Origin episode, but like of seeing like Morrissey on MTV. And so it was like during his like solo release years and people going crazy for him, like mm-hmm. he was like part of the Beatles or something. And I, the whole time I was like, who is this guy? I don't even know who this guy is, but he's so popular. And that just made me kind of like dig deeper into like, okay, well, who is this guy? Why are all these people going crazy over him? And yeah, I guess that led me to learn that he was, you know, the Smiths legendary mm-hmm. front man, the Smiths, and like realizing that a lot of those Smith songs were on mixtapes that I got mm-hmm. in high school. Mm-hmm. So that I actually did know him, but like didn't know like the full kind of thread, I guess, into his solo career.
Uh-huh.
What about you? How'd you find
it? Well, I feel like I briefly mentioned it in a previous episode, but a friend, long story short, a friend put a Smith or a couple Smith songs on a mixtape for me, and then I just really kind of fell hard. That was around 1999, I would say. Mm. And what I did, I pretty much was a instant, I was converted instantly, I should say.
Yeah.
And what I did was I went backwards from there. So I went back all the way into obviously the Smiths catalog and then all the Morrissey solo albums up to that point. So Maladjusted 97 and then backwards. I don't even know where to begin because this is pretty much my favorite artist of all time and my favorite band of all time. So
yeah,
it's
many,
kind of like,
how many
where
times
do you begin?
Have you seen?
I've seen Morrissey 20 times in concert.
That's impressive.
I have two Morrissey Smiths related tattoos. He means, you know, it's kind of an interesting time actually to be a Morrissey fan because lately he said some things that I really don't agree with politically and his views on other things that, I feel like before we dive too deep into this episode, I just want to say, like, I'm not down with that whole thing.
Sure.
But at the same time, everything that he has put out as, you know, with the Smiths and solo has meant so much to me over the course of my life that I can't disconnect, you know? So, yeah, I just want to say, like, whatever he's saying now, like, kind of tune it out. He's an old crazy person.
I feel like he always does crazy stuff and people just tune it out because yeah. the music is so good.
Exactly. So that's the vibe I'm taking here as well in this episode. But I really don't even know where to begin. His music means everything to me. It has been there for me when I was really down, when I was really upset, when I was really sad, when I was realizing who I was as a person. And, you know, I've grown with it. I've danced to it. I've everything. So when I see him live, I kind of, it's a euphoric thing for me. I'm almost always in the front and I'll wait outside for hours to get that handshake or that stare from him. So yeah.
So you've gotten the handshake?
I have gotten the handshake a couple times. Actually, the first time I got it, I remember like I was shaking.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Is it like a warm handshake or is it like...
Well, you have to keep in mind everybody's reaching for it. So it's kind of a shared handshake.
Gotcha.
So it's almost like four strangers and Morrissey. Actually, I do recall... This is so specific, but it's kind of funny. I remember the first time I finally was able to get the hand, the claw. I got it. This is so funny. I got his pinky, I remember. And he had like this big stupid ring on. And I feel like I almost like I was like holding onto it so tightly as if a baby were holding onto its like mother's finger. I almost like took the ring. Like I almost took the Pope's ring.
Oh my gosh.
So it was a moment. But I want to say, and then we'll go further into the music, but one really funny moment, it was actually my very first Morrissey concert. I saw him, like I said, I got into him around 99, 2000, and the first Morrissey show I saw was at the Apollo Theater when he did a residency there in 2003. It was just before the release of You Are the Quarry, which was his big comeback album after disappearing
Definitely
for like 7 years.
One.
Yeah. With First of the Gang to Die and Irish Blood, English Heart. That's a really good album. And it was, I think it was just before the album came out. He was kind of previewing tracks. Anyway, amazing show. I somehow ended up third row seats. Wow. It was great. I was so moved. He did a couple Smith songs. Anyway, end of the show, as he typically does, he throws the shirt out and it's a mad frenzy. And, you know, he threw it at actually very close to where I was sitting because I was third row center and it traveled. It was a couple feet from me. I saw people, you know, really like the look in their face. I'd never seen anything like that before. It was frightening. It was like wild animal or something. And I was like, what? These people are crazy. And I remember I was watching them fight over this. He was wearing like a long sleeve button down, like a forest green dress shirt. Mm-hmm. I was like, these people are crazy. It's like this nasty, sweaty shirt he just threw into the crowd. And I was watching them and I was walking out of the venue. And then just before I was about to leave the venue, I was like, yeah, I'm going to join them. So I went down there and they're still pulling at it. Nobody had gotten anywhere. And I don't remember if it was me or someone else, but someone eventually got a key out. And we split up the shirt, so we all got a part of it. So I still have a piece of it. Wow. So kind of sick, actually.
Everybody took a piece of this shirt, like the Berlin Wall?
Yeah, everyone did. And we all kind of split it fairly evenly. So I just have to say kudos to people for not ripping each other's throats out and actually being fair and human about it, because it didn't seem like that was going to be the case. But at the end, everything went smoothly. And I walked away with a sweaty, smelly piece of Morrissey shirt.
Amazing.
And by the way, yes, I still do have it. I don't know what I'm ever going to do with it, but I do still have it. I was not going to throw that away.
You got to get it framed.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. Anyway, sorry to go on a little journey there. But yeah, I have all that to say. I have very deep feelings for him. And his music has really guided me in a way that no one else really has. Mm.
It's interesting that like an artist can affect you in so many ways, even when they go solo too, like when they go from being in a band and then kind of evolving so much. Because I feel like, what do you think of like more current
Morrissey
stuff versus
hit and miss?
Yeah,
hit and miss. But at the same time, I kind of force myself to listen to it. And obviously I go to all the local shows that he does. But you know, some of it is not so fantastic.
Right.
You know, I fully will acknowledge
that. I think it would
that.
Be hard to, like, just keep churning out you know, hit after hit after hit, mm-hmm. after, you know, being so famous and all of your songs, like, having such personalities. And then maybe something happens to an artist once they, like, experience a certain level of success, mm-hmm. and whatnot. And so, like, maybe, you know, they would have to, like, really dig deep maybe into their eccentricity.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, to really kind of churn out some quality art, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. after being so famous. I would think it's so hard for anybody, any of the Smiths offshoots, not just Morrissey. Like Johnny Marr, very prolific.
He really, yeah, Johnny has done all sorts of stuff, and I feel like it's almost always great. I mean, at the end of the day, not only is he a super cool person, and I think we've both had conversations with him, which we'll get into, but he has a very signature sound, a signature style, and everything that he's brought to Modest Mouse, The Cribs, his solo work, electronic back in the day, The Smiths, like it's always great.
Yeah, you know? I mean, you can't teach that kind of coolness,
no,
like this inherent coolness to know what sounds good. Mm-hmm. I think that's like a gift.
I think he was super gifted. I think also when the Smiths were first forming, he was maybe 19 or something, and was able to create these melodies. Like even when you think of the opening riff to This Charming Man or something, it was so memorable and so poppy, and obviously that, you know, so many of these songs now are really iconic and
I know I was watching this interview he was doing, I think it was from like last year, and he was talking about, I think he said he started like when he was 15, and that he knows he has a sound because everyone keeps telling him he has a sound.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, so like, but he did kind of create that sound that these like legendary songs live in.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And that's definitely like no small feat, you know, to like become known for something. And that's maybe why he has such longevity, mm-hmm. in his career. I mean, he still looked really young, actually.
He looks great. I mean, Morrissey aged terribly if we're talking about right. physically. But Johnny Marr looks great.
Fucking cool,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, he does.
Like, I was like, wow, how do you just, maybe it's like his chill attitude, you know, he just always seems so chill.
Mm-hmm. I think he's an easygoing guy, and I think that's why it was an interesting dynamic with Morrissey and with the other guys as well, because Morrissey is obviously so in his own planet, and Johnny Marr is so down to earth that it was interesting, you know?
Yeah. Quite a weird thing to have them in the same room interacting.
Yeah. And, you know, up until a few years ago, they were back in touch. And then there were actually discussions of doing some Smiths shows.
I mean, that would be incredible.
Could you imagine? But then, of course, like it fell through because, as most things do with Morrissey, he pisses someone off and then
yeah.
You know, it's very difficult to get along with him. If you look at all the band members, all the producers, all the... everyone he's worked with over the last 37 years, whatever it's been, it's a rotating cast. He's challenging.
Do you think that there could be like a magic number though that would just cause him to like not argue with someone and like be like, okay, well, I'm gonna try my best to make this happen, like some giant dollar amount? Or do you think he's just always, he's like the personality where it's always just whatever he wants to do, he's gonna do?
I think it's definitely the latter. It's whatever he wants to do. And you know, I think also if a Smiths tour or even a big one-off show somewhere in Manchester were to happen ever, it wouldn't be the Smith songs necessarily that you want to hear too. It's gonna be whatever he feels like.
Sure.
You know,
good point.
And he's not going to let Johnny Marr dictate the set list. He's not going to let the producer. He's not going to let the booker. Nobody. It's going to be what he wants.
That seems like difficult. Like,
yeah,
you know, like that makes it like, well, maybe it won't happen ever.
Yeah, I don't think it ever will happen.
You know, like everybody else will have to like give in to like and just be like, okay, whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a shame. I mean, hopefully maybe one day he'll chill out. Maybe
I think the older he gets, the more cranky he's become, you know, and the more kind of, I don't know, the more he pisses off even more people.
You know what's going to happen when he becomes like a hologram?
I think that's when I'll stop going to the shows.
When it's Marcy the hologram. But no,
but then you'd actually get to maybe play the songs, or you'd request songs, yes, that maybe he would never even fathom playing now.
Yeah, you know? I'm sure. Yeah, there's probably tons. He'll just be like, nope.
No. There are certain ones that you would want to hear, particularly some of the bigger singles that he will never touch again, you know. So just what is what it is. And then there are certain ones that are constantly played. Like, I feel like over the last 20 shows I've seen, almost every single show has had How Soon Is Now. Not that I mind, but, and obviously that's such a great single, but
yeah,
it's not the only single.
No, maybe it's the only one he can stand.
Yeah, maybe.
Anymore. So at least it's a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll ever happen, you know.
I can't see it happening. Yeah. And definitely if it were to ever happen, it never will happen with Andy or Mike.
Oh, they're, yeah.
You know, if you recall, there was a whole lawsuit in the 90s and Morrissey lost the lawsuit regarding the Smiths royalties. Mm. And he's been bitter since then for 25 years. It'll never happen.
It's really hard when, like, you know, the members don't get along, because then I feel like it kind of ruins the, you know, the potential to, like, recapture those moments, like, live. Just, like, never, it's never going to happen. Artists being picky about what they want to play live is, like, such a typical artist thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like even like if you're a nobody band, like you bands for some reason they just get sick of playing the same songs over and over again, so they'll be like, they'll insist on like, no, I want to play the new songs. Mm-hmm, and then it's always like the manager or the agent or somebody around them who's like, nobody wants to hear your new songs.
No.
You know, they want to hear the hits,
of course.
You know, unless you're Prince or something.
But I get why that's frustrating as an artist. But at the same time, you have to at least give the people that are spending all this money something to hold on to.
Yeah.
You know?
I think so, too.
So it's a little bit of a push and pull. You know?
I mean, I saw, like, the B-52s once in my life. And it was, like, at some whatever big festival kind of atmosphere, and they just released a new album, and, mm-hmm, but I was still like thinking, oh, they're gonna play some old songs.
Well, of course.
You know? And I don't think they played a single.
Wow. No, nothing.
I think it was like all like new songs, and I was like, what? Like, nobody wants to
that's not wise.
Nobody wants to hear these songs, no offense, like they're probably fine, but you know, like when you're at a festival, like in a foreign, I think it was like in Spain, this festival, and like just 40,000 people who probably only know your hits.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they don't want to hear the new songs.
No.
I think Morrissey played that festival too.
Oh, really?
And he made some joke. I remember he made some joke. Oh, like I'm number, you know, 20 on your, you know, some like low number on their like local music charts.
Oh yeah, he's obsessed with the charts. He's always been obsessed. You know, it's funny, there's like some fan run, there are a couple fan run sites, but there's one in particular that kind of tracks every time he will say something, or whenever something trends, or any sort of Morrissey moment. And he is so obsessed with the charts that he will put something on his official site or get his nephew to tweet something.
What?
That literally that nephew is, I've interviewed the nephew before, he's like his photographer and videographer, who's not very good, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, but it'll be like, this single debuted at number 3 in the UK this week, and it's like, who cares? On the vinyl charts only, you know.
Well, he comes from the days where that like actually mattered, I think.
Yeah.
But these days it's like,
It doesn't matter.
It's like, how many spins did you get on, you know,
exactly,
Spotify?
I don't think he ever will accept that, though. No. You know?
Could you choose between those two?
Between Johnny and Morrissey?
Yeah.
I would have to choose Morrissey.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, I have to choose Morrissey just because of obviously the lyrics and the vocals and what he means to me. But Johnny is a genius,
yes,
you know? And I think who I would rather have dinner with is definitely Johnny.
Yes. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
So I actually pulled up a couple references from the old blog about Johnny Marr. Because I actually got really into like seeing him live. Mm-hmm. After I saw him with like his band, The Healers, mm-hmm. and just found that he had such like a magnetism. So I got kind of addicted to going to see him live for a little while. So here's one from January 2003.
Oh my goodness, way back.
And my early blogging days. So.
Yeah, I took a quick glance at this entry and it's kind of everything. So, because there's a sass and it's real good.
All the things I forgot, I sounded like. Okay, so here goes. Peeps, you are going to be so sad to hear this. I got to work this morning to find a message on my voicemail from Johnny Marr's publicist asking me if I wanted to grab drinks with them and maybe a bite to eat afterwards last night. Before the Barry show. Unfortunately, because I took off of work yesterday, I didn't get the message until this morning when it was too late. How fucked up is that? And I called her to see if it was for real, and it was. When she called, Johnny Marr and the Healers were just about to play Letterman. How cool. Wow, Johnny Marr is so hot. This is where I start sounding like a teenager. He can sing and chew gum at the same time. Side note, when asked what kind of gum he chews, he said Airwaves gum. Like you wanted to know. He makes rock and roll seem so effortless. And when assholes in the crowd yell, some girls are bigger than others, he'll throw back, I never really knew what to say that to that either. Why are a majority of his fans total fuck asses?
I love that term. I think we need to bring that back.
Yes, fuck asses. We found ourselves saying that all night from the guys behind us who would talk loudly in Spanish, saying things like, this song is so great because it has no bass and no piano and blah, blah, blah. One of said guys even asked me if I liked the Smiths. What the fuck? I was like, what do you think, asshole? And then he asked me if I liked the show. And I was like, yeah, except for the part where you're talking. And he still continued to talk to me. Shut up.
This is still a problem in 2019, by the way.
And the college gals who showed up for the show were so lame. They couldn't sway to the music on the beat. And they said things like, let's go, Johnny. And that was awesome, dude. Get over yourselves, gals. You're not that cool. Oh, my God. Why can't people just enjoy the music quietly? I don't think Johnny was very amused because when the girls reached out for his hand at the end of the show, he kind of just looked at them while he was taking off his guitar and then left the stage. I don't think he's a touchy-feely sort of guy anyway. Like, I know him.
I love that review.
It was definitely a Johnny Marr moment.
I have a Johnny story before I get into this old blog post of mine. But mine also is from the Bowery Ballroom.
Oh, wow.
Johnny was playing at that point with the Cribs. And the show was great. And afterwards, I was told that he hangs out after the show and like chats with people. And as... you know, I've said my connection with the Smiths is so strong that I didn't think I really wanted to meet Johnny Marr because I thought it would kind of ruin everything or I would become a mess.
Yeah.
So, but my friend that I was with said, listen, let's wait around and we'll talk to him and, you know, play it cool. And sure enough, he did come down and somehow I really did keep it together. And we tried to buy him a drink, but I don't think he drinks. So he wanted an orange juice. I was like, okay. So I got him an orange juice. And we spoke to him for 10, 15 minutes, and it wasn't at all like, tell me about, the, you know, I wasn't at all kind of gawking and being ridiculous.
Yeah.
I shook his hand. I didn't ask for a photo. Nothing to make him feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, oh, you bumped into us at the bar. We bumped into you. We just had a chat. And then I left the venue and I started crying. And then I got into a cab and I cried the whole way back to Brooklyn. I was a mess, but I'm so glad that I didn't that didn't come out when I was talking to him, because I think that would have been incredibly embarrassing.
Oh my gosh.
But it was really a moment for me to meet a Smith, and I really don't have the words for it. I was really touched.
Yeah.
You know?
And you kept your cool.
I kept my cool. And then many years later, he actually, when was this? Maybe 2-3 years ago, just after the 2016 election, I remember, he released a book kind of chronicling the whole Smith's journey up till present day. And he did a book event at Gramercy Theater, and I went, and I met him again briefly. And that time I did ask for a photo. And he was super nice. He's always nice, you know?
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
That's like the vibe he gives off. Just like chill, very approachable in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when he was playing with Modest Mouse, like being backstage, I worked for Modest Mouse's agent at the time, and we were backstage, and I just remember thinking, Isaac and Johnny Marr are like the same height. They're shorter than I thought. but like he was just like really chill and cool and nice.
Mm-hmm.
And it was surprising to me.
But yeah.
I was
yeah.
still scared. I was like, I can't talk to him.
I know. I pulled up a blog entry from 2008. So I've interviewed Andy Rourke, who was the bassist in the Smiths, a couple times. I don't recall if this interview was over the phone or through email, but I think it was over the phone, and then I transcribed it. And he was really sweet, and I've met him as well a couple times. I actually DJ'd a Morrissey-related like birthday event. He wasn't
cool.
there, of course. And he DJ'd, and then I DJ'd in the other room, and I was like, this is kind of crazy. Anyway, he was nice, and I want to say, yeah, I'm not sure if he still does, but he used to live here, and he was bouncing around from venue to venue, and a lot of times I feel like they were the same venues that we would go to.
I mean, he had a radio show on, like, Eastfield's Radio for a while.
And
frequently DJed a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember I once tried to book him for a party, but his agent at the time asked for an obscene amount, and I was like, give me a break. Come on. I'm willing to give you X amount, but not X times 10. You know?
Yeah.
So anyway, this was an interview I did in the fall of 2008. And I don't even know if this album ever came out, but he was going to release an album with a band called Freebase, which was him and Peter Hook from New Order.
Oh, wow.
And then some other random folks from like Stone Roses and stuff.
That's cool.
And then he was also doing something for CMJ. But anyway, of course, I had to throw in a couple Smiths-related questions. And anyway, one of them was about a documentary that had just come out called Inside the Smiths, which was pretty much just him and Mike Joyce, the drummer, you know, their friendship through the years and how they've stayed close and their relationship with the Smiths' music now and all that stuff. So anyway, I asked him about that and particularly their friendship. And he said, back when we started, I knew Johnny quite well. I knew Morrissey. I didn't know Mike. But as we were on tour, Morrissey kept to himself and Johnny was with his wife. Consequently, Mike and me began sharing hotel rooms together. We got to know each other and became close friends. At the moment, Mike's with a great new band called Autocat, comprised of youngsters. By comparison, me and Mike are a couple of oldies. So I guess he was being funny. And then I asked him about his favorite Smiths tracks, which I think is really interesting to hear from someone who was in the Smiths what his favorites were. And he said to me that he's proud of all of them. And he said, I guess I'd pick Rubber Ring, The Headmaster Ritual, and How Soon Is Now. When I consider the back catalog, I must say that we were quite prolific. We were perfectionists about what we did. Not a single song was banged out lightly.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool to hear.
Yeah, it is really cool.
And then there was one more Smiths-related question. What did I ask? Oh, yeah. I asked if, who else he's working with or how it's been working with various people. Because one thing that people might not know is that in addition to his DJing and whatnot, he did a lot of stuff behind the scenes with some notable names. So anyway, this was his answer. Chrissie Hynde gets bad press, but when I worked with her, she was fantastic and passionate.
Ooh.
Yeah, she's a beautiful person. You know, what's kind of interesting is that Morrissey is actually good friends with. It's one of his very few friends is Chrissie Hynde.
Wow. Yeah.
And then he said, I had a great fun working with Morrissey. Sinead O'Connor is often portrayed as a crazy banshee, but she was great as well. So you know, he's pretty much, you could tell the gist of this. He's a sweet guy.
Yeah.
You know? And I appreciated that he brought up all the, you know, the Smith stuff.
Yeah. And that, like, he just, like, generously answered, you know, mm-hmm. like, because I'm sure he gets asked all the time, but, you know, like, he still has, like, a connection to it. You could tell, like,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, I'm proud of it. Of course. Why wouldn't you be?
Of course.
It's, like, so influential in so many ways. I got, when I was, like, booking this venue in Brooklyn, I got him, it was kind of like a co-headline show in a way with, like, this band Real Estate. And that was, it was like this tiny, you know, 150 cap room in Brooklyn. And, cool bands, like, just didn't play there that mm-hmm, much. And mm-hmm. I was, like, trying to figure out a way to, like, get this band I like to play. And I remember I emailed their agent, and I was just like, would they do a show with Andy Rourke, you know?
Hello, yeah.
And they ended up doing the show together, and it was, like, Real Estate played, and then Andy Rourke, like, DJed. Mm. And it was, like, so funny to, like, see who was in the room for each.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
It's, like, it's actually kind of different crowds.
Yes.
Surprisingly. But, yeah, I just remember setting them up, like, upstairs near the fireplace, and they had, like, dinner in the venue together.
Oh, that's cute.
So, that's my Andy Rourke story.
He's a good guy. I like him a lot. Revisiting that interview I did with him, one of his picks was The Headmaster Ritual, which is the opening track on Meet His Murder, which I feel like should be one of the albums we talk about for Repeat Skip.
For sure.
That was such a huge album.
Yeah.
Still sounds so great. And, you know, I'm not sure if we're going to talk about the title track too much, but I feel like that song in particular really changed people's minds about the way they eat, the way they view animals. And, you know, Morrissey got a lot of crap for it, but I feel like, I think it's ballsy that he not only named the album that, not only put the song on the album, but also to this day plays that song very regularly. And I don't know, I think it's kind of baller if you ask me.
You know? Yeah, I mean,
regardless of your thoughts on veganism and vegetarianism, I think it was a political statement, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of artists that are strongly pushing stuff like that, mm-hmm. really. I mean, I can't think of any. You know, they might, like, live that way, but they're not certainly trying to push the idea and, like, convert people. And, like, I mean, you were saying Morrissey is very strict about stuff like that.
Yes.
Even when he performs, right?
Very strict. I mean, even down to, you know, he at this point now is vegan in the sense of, like, his full life is vegan. So he wears, you know, plastic shoes that look like leather and whatnot. But yeah, he's all the way. I mean, a couple years ago, there was a rider that leaked of his that, that had, like, butter on it and milk, and, like, people were freaking out because he was saying he was vegan, but it turns out, I guess, he's partially vegan. But I think nowadays he's, like, full on.
Right.
But he's a super boring eater, from what I understand. It's like potatoes, pasta, and potatoes.
Well, who doesn't like potatoes?
Yeah, right?
But, you know, I've, except for, I guess, people who are on the no carb.
Yeah, it's like all carb diet, which actually doesn't sound too bad, but maybe that's why he didn't age as well as Johnny. But, you know, I think Johnny's actually vegan too, come to think of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back to what you were mentioning though, yeah, everyone in the touring band has to be vegan as well. And also when he does an outdoor show, you know, with other acts on the bill, if it's like a big festival gig, there's a clause in the contract that says if there is even the smell of meat, he is not playing. And that really did happen about a decade ago, I want to say. Wow. I don't recall if it was Coachella, but I want to say it was Coachella, that he was playing and then he smelled the meat and would, like, cut the set short and was really upset.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Somebody on the Barbie got fired that day.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And they're probably still telling that story, like, I pissed off Morris.
I was the one.
But that said, this album is so good. And what was your repeat?
You know, I chose That Joke Isn't Funny Anymore, actually.
I love that track.
You know, I just, that stood out for me. You know, I kind of grew up, got into the Smiths, I think, more in the era of, like, when, like, their greatest hits album came out, like the two disc, whatever, greatest hits. And, so I would say that, like, my memories of the Smiths are more like what was on that greatest hits more than what was on, like, this album from the 80s, you know, like, and so, so that one stands out a bunch. And I actually, like, ran into, like, an old blog post, like, the title of the post was That Joke Isn't Funny Anymore. And it was basically just me talking about, like, seeing music in the Lower East Side. And I was, like, living in Alphabet City and how I was, like, moving back to Williamsburg. And that was, like, a different kind of music scene. It was, like, I actually described Brooklyn as a chiller music scene. and that the Lower East Side was, like, more, like, kind of vibrant and, like, more, like, fast-paced. And I don't know if you could say that today. Like, what would you say?
I don't even know. I think the scene has really gone all the way into Bushwick and Ridgewood that I can't even tell you of, like, a hip or up-and-coming venue on the Lower East Side or in Williamsburg, really.
Yeah. You it's got to be somewhere, like, more underground. Yeah. So it's, like, it's definitely moving further into, like, the Ridgewood area.
Yeah.
And probably other places that we don't go to.
Exactly. They're too far away.
They're too far away. Because as, like, you know, like, areas gentrify and, like, the artists and the creative community get pushed out, I think, you know, it just gets pushed further and further away. And the older we get, the less in tune we are with those
areas.
Yeah,
it's a combination. But you absolutely know. Regarding gentrification and particularly in the last few years, the city, that's a whole other topic, I guess. But yeah, just everything that's being built and the people that are moving into New York now are mostly not creative people. It's like gross finance people and business people. And I don't know, it kind of, it puts a sour taste in my mouth, you know? And you see a lot of people moving to LA and everywhere else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
A lot.
Well, not to get too off topic, what was your repeat?
Listen, if I didn't make it clear earlier, I pretty much love almost every single Smiths and Morrissey song. So it's, you know, these are like picking children in a sense. But I would say one of the ones that I will never, ever tire of on this album is I Want the One I Can't Have. Just not only is it a great song to dance to, but I think that it really describes that emotion when you just, you're longing for someone and it's just not going to happen for one reason or the other. And you don't want to give up hope, but you kind of have to. And, you know, I think there's a great line in the song where he's talking about how his mind and his physical biology are like not meeting up. Like he understands that it's not going to happen, but he doesn't want to accept it in a sense. And I don't know. I think as a teenager and, you know, into my early 20s, I don't know, when you're trying to figure things out with relationships and whatnot, it's still a great track, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's one of my favorites, but of course I love this album so much. Anyway, I guess we should talk about what we would skip. So what would you skip?
It's probably easier for me than it is for you. Yeah, I would actually skip, this is terrible, but I would skip the title track.
You? Oh, really? Well, I can see how it's intense.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of starts out strangely with some weird sounds, and I get it. I get what the message is and all that stuff, but, and, you know, I think it's cool that he ends the album with it, but, yeah, I would probably not. I probably wouldn't listen to that. on repeat, yeah, I would skip that.
I think it's a good thing that it was placed at the end of the album, because what do you follow that with?
Yeah.
You know? Also, the intro is quite long, and then the outro is quite long in terms of the horrific sounds.
Yeah.
So it kind of stands on its own.
Yeah, it's effective.
Yeah.
In its message.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wouldn't be like a track I would
revisit. That's totally fair.
Yeah.
I have to say, when he does that song live, it is very intense, and I've learned not to look at the screen because I don't even want to describe the images. But as you can imagine, they're pretty brutal.
Yeah.
So, but I still think it's badass that he does it. So, I would say my skip would be "Well, I Wonder," which is of course such a pretty track. It just, for me, is not one of the standouts. But I mean, that's not to say that I dislike it. It's just not one of my all-time faves. So that's what I would skip.
Yeah, I mean, that track, like, kind of starts out cool. Like, has this, like, cool guitar line that's, like, really melodic. And then, but it kind of, like, loses me as soon as he starts singing.
I feel like it's kind of dreamy, but, I don't know, maybe slightly ill-fitting in the sequence of the album. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you find that sometimes his voice can be, like, a little Kermit-y?
I think, I don't know,
like,
if I
would... Like on these older tracks, you know?
I don't know if I would say that, but I would say that whenever someone says to me, I can't listen to Morrissey, I can't listen to Smiths because his voice bothers me, I understand that criticism because it's not for everyone.
Right.
I mean, you know, for me, I used to be a gigantic Rufus Wainwright fan, and when I listen to his voice now, it's like nails on a chalkboard. Huh. So, you know, I understand that criticism. The vocal delivery is not for everyone. And obviously he's overly dramatic. And he's so, yeah, I understand that. But I don't get the Kermit thing personally. But
sorry.
No, it's fine. But that said, whenever someone does have some sort of criticism about the Smiths or Morrissey, I soak it in a little bit, and I think I understand it, you know?
Yeah.
It was also, I feel like, when the Smiths were putting out all these, in my view, remarkable, iconic albums, it was so different than what was the mainstream at the time, even though they were being played, I guess, a little bit on alternative radio in the States, and obviously they had a, you know, bigger career when they were existing in Europe, but, you know, it didn't really fit in with INXS.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever else was being played around that time that was, you know, sure. I even think like a band that maybe would be considered their contemporaries, like Depeche Mode, it's really not the same at all, you know? So they kind of stood out for better or worse.
Yeah. Do you think it's because they came from like England, or do you think...
I think they stood out because, at least in the States, because they were British, but also because Morrissey was this enigma. I mean, he still kind of is. And, you know, the first Smith single was Hand in Glove, and the opening lyric is about the sun shining out of his behind. So, literally. So, you know, I think people didn't know what to make of it, you know, and it was really, really different than what was out there.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Yeah. But yeah, I was thinking maybe we could kind of move along to my favorite Morrissey solo album, Vauxhall and I. This is from 94. This is the album actually that has "The More You Ignore Me, The Closer I Get," which is the kind of diss track that he wrote about Andy and Mike and Johnny taking his money from that Smith settlement.
Wow, yeah. Such a different context than what you would think.
Yeah.
That song is about. Yeah.
I love that lyric, I bear more grudges than lonely high court judges. Like, he is not thrilled.
Yeah, actually, now that in that context, that lyric makes a lot of sense. I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, but it's an interesting album because he was actually in a relationship during this time. He finally revealed it when that autobiography came out. He was in a 2-year relationship. So for the most part, this album is, there are moments of sweetness. In spite of him being always a little bitter, because that's just, you know, how he functions. But there are definitely some moments on this album that I think are really beautiful. Anyway, what's your repeat?
Well, it would definitely be "The More You Ignore Me."
Yeah.
Even though that's such an obvious kind of pick. Mm-hmm. I just remember so many nights of like being in New York, like late at night, coming home disappointed, like in the right ride wearing high heels and regretting it. Like, you know, and yeah, like probably being in love with somebody and not getting the feelings returned. Mm-hmm. Like, then, yeah, I would probably be listening to this in my headphones.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it's kind of a recurring theme in Morrissey's lyrics, you know, from early on.
Yeah.
This kind of not being able to get what you want.
Yeah.
You know,
which is ironic because in real life he insists.
Yes. He gets whatever he wants. Yeah. Or throws a fit.
Right.
Yeah. But I think that's, you know, this feeling of being a little alien or a little outside of, you know, what is culturally accepted is, you know, that's kind of just, I think, why he resonates with so many people that consider themselves outside the bubble or weirdos or freaks or whatever term you want to use.
Yeah.
You know, you're really kind of drawn in, you know?
Yeah, because that's actually like a universal feeling. Mm-hmm. If, like, you know, and so like if you could tap into that, you're gonna reach so many more people. I just think like I always, like, even though I really like when he's like cheeky and all that, I love his darker, more cynical kind of you know, songs, as well as like the kind of happy, fast paced, like whimsical ones.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But what was like the one you would skip on this?
Oh,
wait, did you say your repeat?
I didn't. I mean, this is kind of another one where I'm just like, do I pick? But I think if I were forced to pick, I have to at least pick two. I would pick My Heart, Now My Heart Is Full,
yes.
Which really breaks me.
It's a good one.
I can't even count how many times that song has really been there for me. And then also the closing track, Speedway, ends with a lyric, in my own strange way, I'll always stay true to you. In my own strange way, I've always been true to you. I don't know. You know, you don't really know exactly what Morrissey is referencing in the song, but it sounds like some sort of relationship, whether it's romantic or otherwise, that just, you know, however bizarre and obtuse Morrissey can be, he was giving his everything into this friendship, relationship, whatever. I don't know. It's a very, for some reason, that really hits home, that the way that album closes, the way that song closes. But then in terms of my skip, I think if I were forced to, I would probably get rid of Spring Heeled Gym. I think that's more of like a B-side kind of song for me.
Sure.
Yeah.
I chose to skip Lifeguard Sleeping, Girl Drowning. Although I think the title is really great.
Yeah. It's a very Morrissey-esque title,
it's
right?
So Morrissey. So, like, I think kudos to the title.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, it's kind of weird and creepy in the end, and I think his vocals are like, they're actually pretty different.
Yeah, on that track they are a little different. Yeah,
and but I don't know how successful that was. It was, but you know, it was like him sounding a little bit more vulnerable in a weird way.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
But yeah, I would skip it. Sorry.
No, that's fair. That's fair. That would probably be my like number two skip if I were to, you know, pick a second one. You know, one track that neither of us discussed, but I do think it's a strong one and a really sweet track, is the Lazy Sunbathers on this album. Really pretty moment, and you kind of can visualize it as you hear it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a pretty song on this album. But yeah, this is, you know, this is another tough one for me because this is truly one of my favorite albums of all time. So yeah, it's a tough one.
I know, like, it got reissued in 2014.
It did.
Like a 20th year anniversary. But does that make this year like the 25th?
Yes. In fact, I just saw a blog entry somewhere, or maybe a news feature, saying that it was 25 now.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I know it just goes very quickly.
They're all hitting at the same time.
Yeah, they
so
are
funny.
Yeah. It's just like... So that was our Smiths, Morrissey, Johnny Marr Andy Rourke, Mike Joyce, etc. episode. I'm so glad we did that.
So glad. Yeah. It was so good. And, you know, it's kind of cool just recapping all of that history.
And then, you know, my Morrissey on Broadway show is coming up. So oh my gosh. I will definitely be recapping it for the podcast. I'm really looking forward to
that's going to be crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be really fun. You know, I only bought a ticket for one night because, as we talked about, the ticket cost was astronomical. But somehow I feel like I'll wind up going to a couple. Somehow.
Yeah, you'll have to tell me how it is. Morrissey on Broadway.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
I'm glad at least that the ticket I currently have is for opening night. So I feel like that's kind of a, you know, that's nice. Yeah. And then I could kind of, you know, see how the other shows compare.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. But
the first night's always like a good one to go to.
Yeah, particularly this is such a big deal.
Yeah.
So it'd be very interesting to see what he does, and yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I can't imagine like a playbill with Morrissey's face on it, like from like a Broadway playbill.
Yeah.
So that'll be kind of cool. I don't think he's the type who's going to be signing autographs at the stage door. That's not happening. He's going to be gone.
I would highly
no, there's no way that's
that.
Happening. No.
Has he ever done that?
No. You know, typically what happens at a Morrissey show is he will play whatever the last song is, run off stage, and then the band is still finishing the track. Meanwhile, he is already by the time the show properly ends, he's in the car back to the hotel. So I think that's exactly what's going to happen. So
total rock star move.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you guys for embracing our fandom.
Yes. And we'll catch you next time on
Mixtape Memories. Bye.
Bye.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.